and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
My name is Mark.
And we back, baby. Took a week off, had to get some stuff in order, but holy cow, do we have lots to talk to you about today on the show. First and foremost, of course, as promised, the hotly anticipated review of Layers of Us, the third album from the Northwest indie rock group Mimicking Birds. I do not see these musical outlets talking about this album, Mark, and it's getting me all angry again, just like it did 4 years ago with Eons. But we'll run that album here early on, and then afterward on the second half of the show, we'll talk about the highest ranking song in the Billboard Hot 100, which this week belongs to Halsey. The song Bad at Love, off her album from last year, will be the focus of our talks on part two. We'll spend a couple other moments talking through some other stuff this week we listened to, the past 2 weeks, really, with albums from Rye coming out, as well as a number of others. And I think, first and foremost here, Mark, we've got to talk about these Grammys, which have happened at this point 2 weeks ago, but we haven't been together since they've been seen by the public. So we've got lots to dig into here in this episode. We are in the Olympic season, Mark. It's the Olympics of podcasting.
It's the Olympics of podcasting. I'm in my long sled, and I'm going to go down the hill of discussion until no one is at the bottom with me.
That sounds horrible. That sounds like the opposite of the Olympic dream.
I never win.
You're supposed to rise up to the top by yourself, not fall to the bottom by yourself.
I just go all the way down, and no one is there, and I'm alone, and I stand on my own pedestal, and I cry, and I cry.
Which country are you representing in the Olympics, Mark?
The American United States of America.
Okay. Different from the United States of America. These are the American United States of America.
It's more American than before, by double.
Right. Once the South secedes from the Union again, that will be their new name.
Yeah, double America. Right. More America, but more so.
Take that, you dirty Yankees.
I had an elderly relative suggest to me that they should split the America into two halves, the baby boomers who are doing it right and the millennials who are not. And I said, what would you call your half? And he said, America. And I said, okay, well, what does that leave us with? He goes, you'll probably call it something stupid like America 2.0.
That's a pretty good name, actually.
Yeah. There you go.
That's a very turn of the millennium name for something. I'm thinking back to my dial-up internet service, America 2.0.
You millennials and your AIM.
And your 700 free hours of service with CD that come in the mail.
And your away messages that are vaguely referencing an ex-girlfriend you had last week.
Ugh. So ahead of the times, Mark.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be honest, Mark, we're a little behind the times, but nonetheless, I think it's important to dial back the clocks, turn back time, as it were, in the words of Cher herself, and say, Mark, do you have any thoughts on the 2018 Grammy Awards?
Yeah, I do. I think they were...
Okay, great. So, yeah, that's the Grammys. I think you and I both agree on it.
Yeah, that's pretty much how the discussion goes. Like, I feel like somebody could have just...
Not to pull the rug out from underneath your feet. No, not to pull the rug out from underneath your feet, Mark. But every year, I think the Grammys are ridiculous and a joke. And I'm not tuning in this year. I did not watch the Grammys for a second. This year, I caught some reruns and some news the following morning. But man, every year I think they can't get worse. And every year they find a way to prove me wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a particular moment that was especially offensive to you as a delegate from the American states of the United States of America?
Well, in the country of America, we don't have television. We have web television, and we couldn't get rights to stream any of it until just now. So I haven't watched it yet, but it's the kind of thing where with the Oscars, there's a certain sense of things could change or news might happen. Whereas with the Grammys, it's just so outwardly like a marketing event. Like it's just so outwardly not. It just so obviously doesn't matter. It's difficult to care about. I think some of the winners are fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've looked at any of the list. of winners.
Well, I'm pulling it up here right now. But just to echo some thoughts that you had there, Mark, I think the Grammys are caught in between trying to represent what is popular and what is critically acclaimed. And right now, they're really not doing either of those things very well, because they're selecting stuff that is simultaneously not super popular and also not that critically acclaimed. It's like right in the middle of this milquetoast, very flat, uninteresting stuff.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me to look over some of these choices here. I know that Record of the Year is the big award at the Grammys. Like, it's not Album of the Year, it's about the Record of the Year, but I think we gotta start with the Album of the Year discussion, because we've got what I think are four incredibly deserving nominations of artistic statement that were curated by true artists that are trying to say something. Those being Awaken My Love by Childish Gambino, 444 by Jay-Z, Damn by Kendrick Lamar, and Melodrama by Lorde. You and I both, of course, very hot on Kendrick and Lorde, those two albums being my one and two albums of the year. And then along with that, we've got the lone man, Bruno Mars, with his collection of just fun, dancey pop, 24 Karat Magic, which has garnered a serious, surprising run on the Billboard here this past year. And this is the thing that walks away with the grand prize here. I could have seen a situation where Kendrick doesn't win, like he didn't win 2 years ago, and like he didn't win 4 years before that, but man, does this loss here feel especially awful?
Heinous. It's like it's an insane choice. I mean, like 24 Karat Magic is like fine, but it's just hard to fathom. I don't think even outlets who tend to only cover major pop albums, was Bruno Mars' album actually that successful in those spaces? I don't know if he was. I feel like all of the momentum was around Lorde this year.
Sure. Who walked away trophyless.
Yeah.
She got robbed.
You know, I don't know. Just the idea that he won album, record, and song for that album is a joke. That's a joke.
Triple crown.
Everyone should think that's a joke.
I have yet to see anyone say, yes, he was the right, willing, deserved winner here.
Yeah.
Moving into that Song of the Year category, of course, he does walk away with the title for That's What I Like, which is also crazy to me.
Yeah.
But also up for Song of the Year are 1-800-273-8255 by Logic. We got Issues. That's, who is that?
I don't know. Charlie, if you...
444... That's no, hang on. Despacito's in here, too.
Wow.
Despacito is the Song of the Year.
Are you sure about that?
I think it is.
On that list, or you mean generally?
I think Despacito is on that list, the Song of the Year.
Yeah. Then, yes, I agree with you.
Maybe 1-800. I don't know.
I'd probably lean Despacito, personally.
It's an important song.
I would just want to say, though, like, if you only kept up with Grammy winners, like, you know how some people, when they watch film, they watch just, like, you know, maybe casually a movie or two every few months or whatever, just whatever they happen to be interested in or that's, like, getting buzz. But then they want to see the award winners for the Oscars, right? Like,
sure.
They go out, and that's actually when, that's one of the things the Oscars is good at, is distilling kind of easy to digest, but, like, kind of, like, you know, narratively kind of dense stuff for audiences who don't normally get it. So, like, people like my family members who talk about we should split the U.S. into two get to watch dramas that they otherwise would just completely ignore or not hear about, and then have an opinion. Like, you know, a little bit of art seeps into their lives because of the Oscars. So I think the Oscars do some good.
Sure.
But imagine if you were the kind of person who did that with music and you only kept up with music, you know, outside of the context of it being around you, with the Grammys. Like, you would think this was the worst era of music in human history. This would be like this utter garbage pile of like pop detritus that says nothing, does nothing, sounds like everything else. Like, that would be a hard space to live in. Every year they come out with like a decent track that's like, well, everyone can admit this is okay. And then just four totally the same songs we've been hearing year after year that are expensive, but kind of bad. Right?
Yeah. I remember whenever Macklemore won for Album of the Year. Maybe he didn't win Album of the Year, but he beat Kendrick, crazy. Right?
Yeah.
And he had a whole thing, like, writing an apology to Kendrick, like, I'm so sorry I did this. Like, I
don't,
like, when the artists openly acknowledge that, like, this
too.
Is not, yeah, same with Adele and Beyonce last year. When they openly acknowledge, like, this is not the way it's supposed to be, maybe there's an issue.
Totally. Like, also, like, it, this list of songs gets you to question the other categories because, okay, let's look at it this way. If, Kendrick Lamar won for Best Rap Album, that means no rap was good enough this year to be considered for a best song. Just not a single rap artist could penetrate, right?
Right.
Or am I missing part of the list? Was Kendrick on the best
444
song?
444 was on Best Song by Jay-Z. For Best Record, we do have The Story of OJ and also Humble.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, fair.
But even still, like... You listen to those things, and Despacito's up for Record of the Year, and Redbone's in there too, which is, I guess, more of a funk track than it is a rap track, but the Childish Gambino is sort of got a foot in both pails there. Still, to pick 24 Karat Magic over those four songs is still crazy to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think even putting Jay-Z on that, like, the amount of good rap that came out last year, I understand people are, like, big fans of that Jay-Z album. I personally do not care for it. I thought 444 is actually pretty bland, generally speaking, but just for that to be, like, one of the only ones seems crazy to me. There was a lot of good rap music last year, right?
Yeah.
Like,
of course. Run the Jewels, Vince Staples, Kendrick Lamar at the top of it all.
Yeah. If you're putting Foo Fighters in your best rock song category, you've missed the boat.
The best. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Foo Fighters are the definition of neutral on the pH scale of rock. They are the absolute centerpiece of, like, not ever being, like, awful, but so samey and predictable and uninteresting that they don't elicit an emotion in me whatsoever. Aside from Everlong, that song is great. Yeah, I don't know. Getting into the best new artist category here, Alicia Cara is your winner, beating out the likes of Lil Uzi Vert, Julia Michaels, SZA, and Khalid. Interestingly, she took to social media in the aftermath of this thing to post a whole page saying, I will not apologize for winning this award. Apparently others had said, you know, oh, Lil Uzi Vert deserves this, or SZA especially deserves this. You know, Alicia Cara has had a number of albums out. This is not her first thing on the scene. Why is she walking away with the best new artist prize? Though the same could be said about SZA. She had an album before Control as well. And I think the rules surrounding best new artist are vague and malleable and stupid. And you know, hey, Alicia Cara has the right to say, I will not apologize for winning this award. I've worked hard for this. And this is some validation for what I've been doing so long. But I also think if that's how you seek validation, if that's your mark of doing a good job, then I think you need to reconsider where your marks are for that.
Why?
Because I think they have shown to be completely off the mark when it comes to importance or cultural significance here. You know, like to say this Grammy proves that I am doing a good job. I don't know that that's the truth. I think there's plenty of other stuff that's more deserving.
Yeah, but these artists never have to know or care about that.
What do you mean?
I mean, like, this, these people are raking in, like, an endless number of dollars and winning the only music award anyone actually knows by name. So, like, for all intents and purposes, like, that, the larger opinion of the history of like music and what will be remembered or taken inspiration from later is like does not exist yet. So like, it, like looking at this from the outside, everyone else is wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Like by most metrics of how art industries award established artists, that's how it works. So it's like if you were in that space and you won these awards, I could understand why you would just like be blind to all the other stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.
No, I'm not saying I agree. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
This person is very successful and rich. So.
Getting into the pop categories, we had Shape of You by Ed Sheeran for Best Pop Solo Performance.
Oh, God. Why beating is that song out, making me so mad?
Beating out Praying by Kesha, A Million Reasons by Lady Gaga, What About Us by Pink, and Love So Soft by Kelly Clarkson. Very few female winners this year, Mark.
Oh, are we going to get into that part now?
We can if you want.
Yeah, do we want to talk about what the Grammy president had to say about female artists? Because that was a very telling moment for me.
What did he say?
Did you
step it up?
Read this?
Try harder next time?
Yeah, he literally said, like, well, if female artists want to, you know, be in the spotlight, they better step up their game. And it's like, meanwhile, like, in order for you to articulate why he's wrong, this is what makes the Grammys difficult, is that you have to throw Bruno Mars under the bus. I personally thought it was fun to throw Macklemore under the bus. I mean, like, that was just so heinous a choice. But, like, it was hard to throw Adele under the bus, right? To say, well, she shouldn't have won. Even though she probably shouldn't have won.
25 is a fine album.
Yeah, no, it's totally
like,
fine.
It's like the epitome of Grammy success, you know?
Yeah. And Hello was a total cultural moment. Like, she really put the finger on the pulse there. Like, she made a moment. That's 25.
Grammy moment.
The top Grammy moments. Exclusive number two. I'm going to take an exclusive number two right on the Grammys. That's basically what my point is.
We got Feel It Steel for Best Pop Duo Group Performance by Portugal the Man. Ever see that coming?
Oh, God. This is just that's disgusting. It's makes me so bad.
It's like our greatest hits from the Billboard this year.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Divide.
That's all it is.
What?
That's all it is. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Divide was our winner for Best Pop Vocal Album. Pretty insane there. You Want It Darker for Best Rock Performance from Leonard Cohen, beating out Chris Cornell, Foo Fighters, Kaleo, and Nothing More. Don't even know who those two guys are.
What is that category? There's so many obscure categories in a way that any other award show does not have. Like, there are, like, interesting categories, specific categories in film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in, like, the Tonys, but, like, you can kind of suss out what they mean. And then when someone tells you, oh, well, this is this part of the show. Oh, I get it. Like, why is that a separate category from other songs? Like, why is performance somehow separate or needing to be awarded differently than just best rock song? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. I don't know.
Is that vocal performance?
I don't know. It's how much you feel it when you sing it. Leonard Cohen really felt it when he sang it.
I want it darker.
For Best Rock Album, for albums containing at least 51% playing time of new rock, hard rock, or metal recordings, just in case you were curious as to what a rock album was, Mark.
Right.
Your nominees are Emperor of Sand from Mastodon, Hardwired to Self-Destruct from Metallica, The Stories We Tell Ourselves by Nothing More, Villains by Queens of the Stone Age, and A Deeper Understanding by The War on Drugs, and that was your winner.
So strange!
The War on Drugs.
What a category!
So, you know, wow, it's a little bit better than that Metallica album and Mastodon. So.
Like, what? That's the other conversation is, what is alternative music to the Grammys? Why is The National an alternative, but War on Drugs is not?
Well, yeah, that's a rock music album, Mark. The National is your alternative music winner.
That's what I'm saying. Why is War on Drugs in the rock album, but The National is an alternative?
They did not define best alternative album. They just say vocal or instrumental. So whatever alternative means to you is what it means.
Okay, but do you agree that that's a bizarre category then?
Of course.
Like, The National's last album was good, but I felt like it was the most straight up, like, rock album they've done. Like, that, to me, if anything, I thought that fit in the rock category pretty neatly. And I thought War on Drugs was a little stranger and more alternative, but maybe I just don't understand the criteria.
Yeah. Kendrick did sweep a lot of the awards for rap performances, for Humble, for Damn, and for Loyalty, actually, in there, for the best rap song performance. Best rap song performance.
Yeah.
But on the whole, man, it's pretty ridiculous. It's disappointing in every sense of the word. I see nothing of value we can take from this year. My girl Lord got shut out, which was a crime.
Yeah. You know, I think, like, there's some really... Here, I found a category here towards the bottom of the list that was just endlessly interesting to me. Um, Okay, here we go. So I want to kind of ask you what you think this any of this means. Okay. This is the award for best spoken word album, and in parentheses, includes poetry, audiobooks, and storytelling. Okay. So of all of the text written last year and in late 2016, what do you think is the winner for the best poetry, audiobook, or storytelling?
Whichever one is by the biggest celebrity.
Princess Diarist by Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
What is that category?
Well, it's poetry, spoken, or
Or written, storytelling.
Or storytelling.
What is that? That's crazy. Am I crazy? That's crazy.
It's a pretty niche category.
And also, don't give Dave Chappelle the best comedy album. Are you serious? All of the amazing comedy being done right now, all of the really biting, interesting satire people are doing on stage, and you're going to give Dave Chappelle the most middling, everyone can kind of think, like, yeah, it's more Dave Chappelle. Haha, wow, he said something about the president. Like, that's going to be the best album of the year. That's the most inventive. That is the height of comedy, is those two way too long Dave Chappelle specials for Netflix. Give me a break.
Dave Chappelle's pretty good.
Dave Chappelle, honestly, is just... not on the up and up as much as he could be. He is just not as biting as he once was, frankly. I will stand by that. I thought those last two specials were not amazing.
Hmm.
Thought they were totally middle of the road.
Did you like his presence in Kendrick's opening act when he said, the only thing scarier than an honest black man in America is being an honest black man in America?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. Man, is this on cable? CBS? Whoa.
I don't know, man. Burn the Grammys.
Burn them to the ground. There's nothing of value to see here. But you know where there is value, Mark?
What? Where?
Mimicking birds.
What? I've never heard of them. Tell me about mimicking birds.
Well, mimicking birds is a... alternative, I guess you could say, rock band.
Oh, like the National.
Exactly, just like the National. It's okay. Like the National
2.0. Not like Mastodon.
Mimicking Birds, what started as the solo project from guitar singer-songwriter Nate Lacey has evolved into a trio of performers, with even more folks tagging on as time goes on. They are out of Glacial Pace Records, which is the record label run by Isaac Brock of Modest Mouse. They come from the same area geographically, and back all the way in 2010 when they were first starting out, Isaac Brock had a lot of positive things to say about them. And they're a band that means a lot to me, Mark, because I was there from the get-go. There's not a lot of bands I can say I was there to witness their slow rise to power, but I had that first album back in 2010. Because I was obsessed with Modest Mouse at the time and listened to it nonstop and was really just moved by it.
Wow.
And in 2014, they gave us Eons, which was a further evolution of their sound, incorporating more up-tempo percussion, a bit of sonic soundscape. But what was most interesting about that album to me was the very last track, which involved the slow progression from the simple piano riffs into this synth explosion that closed out the album, signifying that potentially more evolutions to the sound were possible. And so here we are, the album is Layers of Us, and they have continued that evolution, Mark, furthering to increase the amount of electronic production inside of their sound. Their sound has gotten bigger and more cosmic. Lacey has always found himself lyrically concerned with existential ponderings of the nature of life and existence and the natural world, and he's free to continue to explore that space on here. But it never becomes tiring because the soundscapes behind him are constantly shifting. And this record goes into some places that I'm surprised, you know, as a fan of Mimicking Birds. Mm-hmm. Their previous albums may be critiqued for being too samey, to staying in one spot, but I think this album definitely goes to many different places over its, you know, say, 40-some minute runtime here. I don't know where it stands in my appreciation for the band at this point. I think that there are a lot of fantastic moments on this record, but with the more I listen to it, I don't know that it rises above what's come before, just because those other records mean so much to me personally. But I will say that I had a great time with it and enjoyed it quite a lot, and it's a shame that others aren't talking about this.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering, like, where you would stand. Like, there's a pretty clear shift towards a little bit more, like, alternative pop kind of aesthetic. But I was really curious where you would what you would feel about it. It's very different, at least from my perspective.
Surprising.
Yeah, it is surprising. It's like, there are songs on here in which the sort of woodsy, like, aesthetic of Mimicking Birds is just kind of like the trappings of what I think is a pretty straight-ahead pop song with some interesting effects, which I did not expect coming into it. I bounced off it a few times, in fact, because I was just like in a certain state of mind to listen to a Mimicking Bird style thing and then realizing this is not that thing. I need to, this is not the time. This is not the time for Mimicking Birds yet.
Yeah. I think in some ways it does sort of diverge from their previous sound. And, you know, I went back to their other albums as I was listening to this too to try to place it in my appreciation. And I think there's some inconsistency to each of their previous albums. But there is also something about the purity of the way those previous albums capture Nate Lacey's voice. His voice is really heavily modified on this album, with filters and other effects to make it sound much larger and more powerful than it is. Because the sounds around him have grown in power, and including, you know, synths and swelling crescendos mimicking, great waves and mimicking birds. I think that they felt the need to also magnify and amplify his voice in places. And I also think that maybe detracts from what made this group so emotional and intimate on its first go around. This is not, I think, a very intimate album. It's less personal than the previous one. So again, I think that's maybe why it comes down a little less favorably to me compared to that previous stuff. I appreciate the experimentation, and I wouldn't want another album of Eons or even the self-titled here, because I think that style is kind of run its course, but maybe a more careful mixing of those sounds here, of trying to balance the more basic stripped down acoustic stylings with that sweeping production. I love the way their production value reminds me of stuff like The Moon and Antarctica from Modest Mouse and some of their more like, you know, mid-2000s work. But I also think maybe they're starting to be consumed by their grandiose ambitions of capturing these moving soundscapes. And I don't know that the emotion that's delivered from that is worth sacrificing the intimacy of those previous records.
Yeah, it's interesting when you say grandiosity, because I feel like that segues pretty neatly into a larger theme I ended up finding in the album that I kind of wanted to bring to your attention. Now, would you just do me the biggest kindness and play a clip for me?
Anytime.
From Sunlight Days. Just throw on Sunlight Days for
me. The lead-off single on this thing, Sunlight Days. Let's jump into it.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think from that clip, from where I'm standing, it's pretty obvious that a lot of tracks on this, but most particularly Great Wave and this track, Sunlight Days, are essentially U2 tracks if Bono was sleepy. Like, finding intimacy in these really big, rapturous, like, overwhelming sounds, and then trying to use that to overwhelm the listener, but then have someone in the middle of that great wave, so to speak, connecting on an intimate level is literally U2's entire thing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but feel like this is a very young, but like kind of subdued U2. Like, that's so much of that is written like a U2 song.
Yeah. A lot of that like edge style guitar stuff in the background.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't considered that, but now that you mention it, it does kind of sound that way.
Yeah.
Let's play a little bit from Great Wave.
Yeah.
I think the song is really emblematic of the way they've progressed as a band here. Really heavy electronic influence on this thing. And while the lyrics are pretty similar to previous stuff, they've really changed their sound up. And nowhere is that more noticeable, I think, than like the 2/3 mark of this track, where they allow this sonic representation of the wave to take over, and the tempo increases and the volume increases, and it's pretty powerful stuff. It's like, if you had told me that that is the same people that two albums ago were doing stuff like this. I'd have been like, you're crazy, man. That's not the same band at all.
Yeah. So it is the same band, Charlie.
It is?
It's the same band.
You're crazy.
No, I promise. It's mimicking birds.
Wow. But even then, like, some of the more melancholic tone down, like, that loop riff is just daggers right into my soul every time I hear it. Like, it's just amazing. And I don't know that I ever felt that way on this record. So I think I'm still enjoying the thing front to back, but I do think it's a bit inconsistent, and I don't think it possesses the same heartfelt feeling that I got from the previous records.
Yeah. As someone who was not a super fan of Mimicking Birds,
but you're definitely a fan. You're definitely a big fan, not a super fan.
Well, I listened to the first album very casually and enjoyed that. I think their second album is good, but yeah. I don't really hang my hat on them the same way. I like pick and choose from those albums. I don't know. I find that they sit in the same space for a little long. I kind of thought this was an interesting transformation from that perspective, because there's this feeling that they could transition into a like Vance Joy style pop band, and I think it would actually be a pretty neat transition. Like, I don't think that they would. I think they could just enter that space. This album proved to me, if they wanted to be alternative pop musicians, they could just be that. And I don't think any people on the other in that crowd would blink an eye at their arrival.
Sure.
But there are certain tracks that actually do, very few on this album. But there are a few tracks that actually mix the like grunge folk aesthetic of the first two albums with the more shimmering alternative pop stuff. I think Dust Layers does that pretty nicely.
The opener.
I think, yeah, the guitar work on that it recalls the more earthy kind of tones of their original stuff in kind of a fun way.
Yeah, I think that song works really well as the opener here, because it is a segue. You know, it's taking you from their previous sounds into the new era. And like the last track on Eons, eventually segued into that more electronic stuff, we get an opening here that does feel like it belongs on Eons. Here's the opening of Dust Layers. Like, they are the kings of just setting a mood on an album. You know, like, in the first seconds, you get a great sense of what this thing's going to be like. Similarly to the opener Memorabilia from Eons, I love the first, like, 15 seconds of this thing. And so you're getting that like mouth harp in the background, so it's more earthy, more folksy. Man, those opening four chords just, again, get me in the heart every time. And I think that this opener from Dust Layers is really good, but it's just not quite there again for me. You know, I like it a lot, but it's not quite the peaks I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think they're an extremely earnest band too. So whenever you have a folk band be that earnest, like that song in particular is my favorite. That's from the second album, right? That's the opener from the second album. Yeah.
Yeah, the opener to the second album. So good. So
that's
good.
That was the track that I like took for my end of year list for that album from that year. And I think there's a certain, like, whenever you're that earnest as a folk musician, as long as you have like a really well-structured, like a well-rooted song beneath you, like folk will forgive you. Like you can be as corny or as sort of like gently intellectually exploring as you want, like opening yourself up to those kinds of like, man, we're all just dust in space, you know,
cosmic
just flying
musings
on this big rock. Yeah. As long as you got a really well-rooted folk tune, all is forgiven. The danger with transitioning to alternative pop is that it is kind of a corny genre to begin with, and it requires a little more subversion to not get too sugary sweet. I don't know if they've found that balance on this album. I feel like it occasionally, like for me, a track like Great Wave, I didn't find it powerful so much as I found it a little, I don't know, a little too sugary. Like it's something a little
sure.
bit too like, I get it, we're exploring, yeah.
it's a wave.
Yeah. Wow, your eyes are like the ocean blue kind of like poetry thing. What?
You got it.
Did I do something wrong? Okay.
But I think some of my favorite moments on this album are where they sound the most like the previous album. And I hate to say that because like I don't want another one of those albums, but I also love the way that thing sounds. And I'm glad they're progressing and challenging themselves, trying new material out. I always appreciate experimentation. I just don't know that it always works for me here. I think the second track, Another Time, is an Eons classic. It fits right in with those. I love the layer of fuzz on top of that too.
Yeah,
fits with
listen
the album
to the
cover.
Production there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the rising returning wave of the synth there. Like that track is what convinced me actually. It's funny you say it's from Eons. Cause I listened to the track and I thought, oh, they could totally succeed they could totally gain in popularity with a track like that. Like they could cross over very easily if they continue to write music in that style.
Yeah. Maybe the other one I'll bring up is, maybe even more so than the previous one there, very Eons-like, is Belongings from the second half. But even on top of that, more standard piano, you get that lovely little like synth rhythm going on there. It's really nice and segues into some really cool synthy stuff in the final moments here. I like those both tracks a lot. I think they're the best examples of them successfully combining their older sound with this new experimental approach they've got going on.
Yeah. As someone who is not as invested in the band, I like the problems I have with the other two albums are still like they haven't convinced me to fall head over heels for them quite yet. Because in that track, I did find the production interesting, and I found the transition interesting, but I still feel like, as a lyricist, I just kind of wish there was something a little more pressing or a little more self-aware to what he actually is saying on the track. And I don't know the vocalist's name. I should have had his
name
before me. Nate Lacey. I kind of feel like Nate Lacey's vocals, are sometimes just a little too flowery or something. Like there's a lack of, like a feet on the groundedness to the music that puts me off, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's still, I don't know. I still found it to be like a fine enough listen. I didn't have a bad time.
Yeah. One last thing I'll bring up here is there's a pretty strong Isaac Brock feature on this thing in Island Shore. And I gotta say, you know, he's guested on both their previous albums and certainly has served as sort of an overseer being the head of the label.
Right.
But you and I, you know, have voiced our thoughts on the interesting failure that was Strangers to Ourselves. And man, this feature, once again, I'm kind of like, what's he doing here? Like, I don't know exactly what he's going for. It's interesting, but it's not necessarily good to listen to. I'm so excited to see these two guys work together, but man, the end results here, I think Island Shore is maybe one of my least favorite tracks on this thing.
Yeah, I also, when Isaac Brock kicks in, you know he's there.
It's like,
there's
it's
no,
immediately
like,
I'm coming to you from a trailer over here whispering about what's going on over there.
There's no mistaking whenever he is on a track.
Let's get a little bit of that so the rest of the audience can hear. Here's a clip from Island Shore. Has Isaac Brock lost it?
He never had it, right? That's what makes him so interesting.
But has he gotten it back then? Is that the question? Has he found it?
I you know what? Like, for as much as I'm like, man, those last two of Mos Maus albums are terrible.
No, don't talk bad about We Were Dead Before the Ship Even Sank. That's not a bad album. It's not their best.
I don't love it.
But it's not a bad album.
I'm not willing to feel excited about that album.
Spitting Venom, Dashboard, Miss the Boat.
Yeah. Okay, whatever. I'm just saying, I will continue to listen to Isaac Brock because you never know. You just never know with an Isaac Brock if he's going to be drunk on moonshine walking out of a trailer in a Mimicking Bird song, mumbling God knows what. Yeah. Or if he's going to be producing the most clean pop song in their entire discography in Dashboard. You never know with him.
You never know. And that's why they're so much fun.
Yeah, well, I'm here and now I'm thinking about squirrels down the tree and I ran and got some huff and paint and I'm down in my knees. What?
You got it. All righty, Mark. What are you taking for your highlight reel?
I want to play a real quick fun game. Just one very quick thing before we close out this review.
Okay.
I'm going to paint a mind picture for you. I want you to join me. Okay?
Okay.
Hold my hand.
Okay.
Okay. Now, close your eyes and imagine Life is Strange Season 2 just came out.
Okay.
And you're just now finishing Episode 1. What would you like to be happening in Season 2 of Life is Strange?
Ideally, brand new characters.
Well, let's just for the sake of it, like, let's just pretend it's the same. Just for this
situation. Same characters? Situation.
Yeah, if you had to continue on.
Okay. So continuing from the ending.
Let's, you know what? How about this? It's a bonus episode.
Okay.
From the first season, including the main characters. Everyone's there. Everyone's fine.
Okay.
There's another mystery they have to solve.
Okay.
Chloe. Max, we have to solve this mystery before it's too late, right?
Yeah.
And then whatever Life is Strange stuff happens, it's the end of the episode. I want you to play One Eye Jack for me.
Just from the beginning?
Just play from the beginning.
Okay.
Max looks out the window. And then she has a realization. Chloe, we have to solve this mystery.
Max, I told you.
Chloe, I'm Rachel Amber.
It's my step douche again.
Oh, David. And then you cut to the diner. Cut to the diner. There's the mom. She's making coffee. She looks out. It's snowing outside. It's the middle of July.
Whales. Whales on the shore.
Oh my God. There's a whale on the shore. Someone wheels past. The mysterious figure wheels past. And you just see their face next to a whale.
And there's that guy whose dog almost ran in the street that you saved.
There's that dog that ate Chloe alive like 20 times. That was it. I just thought it sounded like the end song of a Life is Strange episode.
That's pretty good. Voice. And it's fitting because they're from that area, so it makes sense their sound would be emblematic of the geography.
Mimic Birds from Arcadia Bay?
Hell yeah.
That's crazy.
All right. That's pretty good. So are you taking What I Jack as one of your highlights then? So imagine yourself in a Life is Strange video?
Just so I can do that, like, alone in my room. Chloe. I was going to take Apart because I think the guitar work in Apart is actually really satisfying. I think that's when... Listen to that.
That, the banjo in there.
Yeah, the banjo is incredible.
Maybe the most folksy they sound on this thing.
And not only that, it's they carry the tension of like the angst in their music really well. Yeah. And that banjo, just the rising, like the escalation of banjo is like choice. If every song on this album had the urgency and the melancholy of that track, but like the energy of that track, this would be like a end of year contender for me. That's amazing.
Cool.
So I'm pretty much just taking that.
Just one?
Yeah. I'm telling you, this album did not convince me that this I thought it was a
we had a great conversation about this thing. We said so many good things, and you're like, I'll just take the one.
I just don't know. I think a lot of tracks sound the same.
That's like,
listen, I already have a Bono and He's Awake for my
It's like the Olympics of podcasting out here. We just gave a great run. I feel like I'm Tanya Harding out here. Give me a fair shot, you know? Just because I'm not dressed up like the Scottish people you love, Irish people that you love, doesn't mean that I'm not a contender. Like, evaluate the skating, you know? Why has it got to be my personal life bringing into this?
Dude, at the end of the year, I don't know if I'm going to wanting to be here Dust Layers over and over.
You know what? I don't know that I completely disagree with you, but I love these guys. I do like this album a whole lot, and I'm going to take three. I'm going to take Sunlight Days, which I had from the beginning of the year because I liked it a lot. I'm going to take Belongings, and I'm going to take Another Time, which I like a whole lot too.
Well, great.
So there you have it. That's Mimicking Birds. That's Layers of Us. And this will be a quick break from us when we take a, when we come back from our break, we're going to take a time to listen to Halsey and tell you what we think about that. So stay tuned.
I like being involved in helping out bands that I think are really good and might not get the attention they deserve and stuff because there's a lot of other people who might be making worse music. They're a lot more motivated to put themselves out. You know, I mean, Mimicking Birds are a perfect example of these. You know, these are all like Portland kids who were raised, you know, like outskirts of Portland. Just normal dudes, like super, would have no connection to anyone in the independent music scene or anything, you know. The music is stunning. Weird as it is, most of the music I listen to is stuff that I put out.
All right, we're back and ready to tell you about Halsey.
Oh, good.
She's bad at love, Mark. I'll tell you that. I don't know much about her, but I know she's bad at love.
If there's one thing I am bad at, it is love.
You know the song.
That's the shortest 30-second breakdown we've ever done. Wow.
If only someone would genus annotate you.
Genus annotate? This is the human genus. Mammalius.
Speaking of genus annotating, did you see that someone genus annotated the president's State of the Union address?
No.
I can't remember what news outlet had it, but they said, we're going to annotate the State of the Union. And I'm like, okay, that seems interesting. And I click on it, and it's right to a genius page.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Although I think they do have some like journalists who use Genius to do that sometimes, I think. Unless I'm making that up, maybe it was that.
That would be the longest 30-second breakdown in the history of Weekly Beats, so maybe we'll do that as a bonus episode at some point.
You know what? Actually, I just finished Fire and Fury the other day, so we could do it. We got a real long conversation. We could annotate a lot right now.
We got a whole separate podcast to get into.
Listen, I have a thing or two to say.
We know you love your audiobooks, Mark. At this point. All right, let's get into Bad at Love. Here's Halsey from Hopeless Fountain Kingdom. We'll be right back.
tastes like Jack when I'm kissing him. So I told him that I never really liked his friends. Now he's gone and he's calling me a bitch again. There's a guy that lives in a garden state, and he told me that we make it till we graduate. So I told him that the music will be worth the wait, but he wants me in the kitchen when it's dinner plate. I believe.
Whoa.
Whoa. Okay.
That grabbed me right away. That beat's
There's
great.
A lot going on here.
That sounds great. That's a really good, yeah. That's great production. I don't, you know, it remains to be seen. Halsey's voice for me is a little bit of the, like, trying so hard to emote
right.
ilk, but that beat, it was great. That was like, I'm immediately pulled in. That sounds like a really moody rap track. Like from the 90s,
yeah.
But written now. Like, that sounds so good. Like, totally urgent and moody and good. Just right off the bat. I'm going to keep saying that word. It's going to be my whole analysis. Moody, moody, moody. Moody man.
It's moody, moody, moody. Well, I'll tell you that Bad at Love is produced by Ricky Reed and Shahayat.
Chiny it.
Roger Shiahead.
Wow.
Who is an American record producer who has worked with major artists such as Travis Scott, Dram, Calvin Harris, Lil Yachty, Miguel, Kesha, Halsey, G-Eazy, Kendrick Lamar, and Dr. Dre. Maybe you remember him from producing Miguel's song Skywalker off his most recent album.
Wow.
As well as Broccoli from Dram.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, he's credited songwriter and producer of that.
That's great.
He did Boots on Kesha's album Rainbow from last year, which you liked quite a bit then, right?
I'm discovering an artist right now.
Let's see if he's got anything else here. Yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, no. Travis Scott, Birds in the Trap, sang McKnight.
No kidding.
How about Way Back? Way Back.
Okay, this guy's great. I gotta find this guy and like listen to his career. I don't think I've ever listened to a Billboard song that just like by second three, I was like, I'm in. What's gonna happen? What is about to happen to be in the song?
All right, well, let's see if we can make sense of these lyrics here. Halsey is saying she's got a boy back home in Michigan. He tastes like Jack. Although Halsey grew up in New Jersey, she explains that the boy referenced here lives in Michigan. And Jack is a common nickname for Jack Daniels, Tennessee whiskey, the top-selling American whiskey in the world.
What if Jack was a nickname for Jim Beam instead?
That would get many people very confused.
Yeah, and Jim was code for Johnny Walker Blue only. I actually like how all these lyrics jump off. Like, I like that she's immediately setting a tone and a story that this guy is maybe a misogynist that she's in a relationship with, right? Just like instantly there's like a story, like all this sort of like, you know, slow, dark energy, and then just her talking about this kind of like familiar and bad relationship. That's a really interesting starting point. It just kind of kicks off too.
Yeah. She says, I told him the music would be worth the wait, but he wants me in the kitchen with a dinner plate.
Yeah.
So he doesn't believe in Halsey's music dream and won't support it when she could be playing the stereotypical female role of a good housewife, cooking, cleaning, staying home, being attentive to him and him only.
Also, these are maybe high school sweethearts, right? The line, he told me we'd make it till we graduate?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe college.
Right. But either way, like, that's a particular time for like adolescent male dominance that's like really...
Right.
Gross and bad. I feel like in high school women grow emotionally faster than like men as a result of the way the social structure of high school works. So that's all very familiar and real feeling to me. It's like a mystery. There's a mystery to this story. Is she gonna overcome this guy? I don't know, Charlie.
I can't remember the last time you were this interested in the Billboard song.
It just kicks off. Like, those lyrics just start. Like, she just goes. She's just immediately telling you the story.
Yeah. Well, let's see where it goes next, huh?
No, I'm done. I don't want to hear the rest. Don't
too
play
bad.
It. Do not play it. But jealousy, get the best of me. Look, I don't mean to frustrate, but I always make the same mistakes. Yeah, always make the same mistakes, cause I'm bad at love.
trying. You know I'd be lying, saying you're the one. Ooh, that could finally fix me. Looking at my history, I'm back.
There's that pop chorus.
Yeah, I was hoping for a little bit more diversity in the chorus there. That's definitely just heightening the verse and then having her go nuts on vocals, which is fine. Mm-hmm. That's not a deal breaker for me, but definitely was hoping for a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. It's got sort of Florence and the Machine gravitas in those long notes there, right?
Yeah.
She really gets into it, sounding like old Florence Welch.
Yeah, like a rock vocalist.
Yeah. So the chorus is annotated. It says, Halsey's had so many past love affairs and they have all ended, so her dating record isn't so good. And she even goes over some of these past relationships to show that they've all ended due to something. She doesn't want them to mislead her new lover by letting them think they could be the one to change her and teach her how to be good at love. It's possible that one of her past lovers tried to teach her love, but it didn't turn out well because she's still no good at love.
Wait, let me get this straight. They all ended? Why did they all end?
Because she's no good at love.
Was it? Oh, it was due to something.
Yeah, because of something, they all ended.
Okay, I see.
I think it's more, and not to throw my own annotation on top of this, but to suggest that she is bad at love because she doesn't conform to the man's expectations of what love is.
Oh, interesting.
That's a better annotation. She says in the pre-chorus, I believe that we're meant to be, but jealousy gets the best of me. I don't mean to frustrate, but I always make the same mistakes.
Yeah.
Despite having the best intentions, when she enters a new relationship, Halsey falls victim to her jealousy time and time again, imagining problems that aren't there and creating problems as a result. But I don't think she's presenting herself as a bad person in this song. I think it's sarcastic and ironic.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting through line. I'm actually kind of picking up on what you're saying more than what the genius annotator, you know, SnipeX Killa 420 or whatever is saying.
No, that was Alea Milano.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily feel that that she is painting her ex-lover in a flattering light. I think potentially with good reason. Mm-hmm. Because high school relationships suck almost all the time. Like, it's very tough. And whenever they succeed, it's after much growth and maturation on both from both partners. And she is not painting that ex-boyfriend as someone who was willing to do that. There was someone who was holding her down. So, and I also kind of like, though, that she does. In my opinion, I think the jealousy thing is a little bit of her saying that she has a flaw, too. Which I think complicates the narrative. And it's just good. 10 out of 10.
It's just good. You're loving it.
I'm having a great time with this song. This is a good minute.
Well, we got two more minutes to go, Mark.
Okay.
Here's the next minute.
Got a girl with California eyes, and I thought that she could really be the one this time. But I never got the chance to make her mind because she fell in love with little thin white lines. London girl with her attitude. We never told no one, but we look so cute. Both got way better things to do, but I always think about it when I'm riding through. I believe that I'm in too deep. Jealousy, 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 get the best in me. Look, I don't mean to frustrate, but I always make the same.
I don't mean the first drink.
She's got a girl with California eyes. Halsey revealed in her video for Billboard that California eyes is a reference to the girl's blue eyes, like the sky in L.A. She had bright blue eyes, like the sky in L.A. What I imagine the beach. I'm like a perfect day in Malibu. It would be like that. The San Juan, California city of Los Angeles, commonly known as the City of Angels, seems to be affiliated with the House of Angeles. If we assume that the girl she's referring to belongs to Angeles, it could be Lauren Jauregui's character. She is mentioned in Heaven in Hiding, Alone, and appears in Strangers.
Okay.
I don't understand any of that.
I got totally confused there. Yeah, but that's interesting, though. I'm getting the sense in the second verse that she's in a very different stage of life, too.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's... I think what's interesting to me about that is there's a tendency in people to measure their personal growth or their general perspective on the world around them based on their past partners. I don't think that's necessarily the best way to do it, but I definitely have a tendency to do that. Like, okay, this was a stage where this is the kind of relationship I was in. So I think that, I don't know, that makes sense to me. This feels like a genuinely self-reflective song, you know?
And not just tearing other people down.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Because the question could be, like, you know, if you are someone that's bad at love, well, to love someone is to care for them so much that their flaws are still present, but the positives outweigh the negatives. And if these folks still have these negative things, well, she's bad at love for not pushing through the negatives and still loving them regardless of that.
Yeah, which is, you know, if, you know, if your boyfriend is a nice London lady who had a drug addiction, or you know, a misogynist from high school, like, maybe take a step back and think, okay, it seems like they had some pretty debilitating problems that maybe extend beyond sort of normal partner jealousy. Maybe,
right.
You know, you were maybe justified to fail in that situation. Maybe that's how the song ends. Maybe at the end of the song, she's like, but it turns out those people sucked and I'm great.
They're bad at love.
Yeah, it seems you the whole time.
It's that classic country music twist in the final chorus. Halsey alludes to her lover being addicted to the thin white lines, which is the way cocaine is usually separated. This is not the first time that cocaine is mentioned on the album. On her track Don't Play, Halsey states, running lines like a marathon, got it all white like Parmesan. Another concept, the little white lines, are self-harm scars, therefore making sense as to why she never had the chance to make her hers.
What? I didn't get that at all, did you?
Angie, you spelled therefore wrong.
Angie.
Another concept, the thin little white lines are self-harm scars, therefore making sense as to why she never had a chance to make her hers.
Therefore making sense is an interesting phrase.
Therefore making sense. In an interview with Billboard Music, Halsey explained why this relationship was kept private. Every time I'm in London, I think about this one girl that I was dating that I didn't tell anybody I was dating. Keeping my relationships really private, which is exciting and exhilarating, but kind of made me feel like I was committing a crime, which is not how a relationship is supposed to feel. Chaser Wolf 21148 says, come on, guys, gals, non-binary pals, don't overthink it. It is, after all, nothing more than a theory until proven by the artist herself. Not worth an argument. I don't know who's arguing over those lyrics.
Wait.
But it's not worth an argument, Mark.
Could you read that again to me, please?
Sure. It says, come on, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Don't overthink
it. That's it. That's it. Let's get that painted on my living room wall.
Come on, guys, gals, non-binary pals.
I love that. That's great.
Don't overthink it.
Yeah, that's. I feel like there's a that needs to be said to a lot of people in America and in the world. Don't overthink it.
We need more showings of peace in this time of Olympics.
That person is gay. Yeah. Don't overthink it.
Yeah. Don't overthink it. It's not an argument.
That person's trans. Yeah. No. Don't overthink that.
Don't overthink it.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. And then world peace happened. And we give an award to that guy. What's his username?
Something Wolf. Chaser Wolf.
Chaser Wolf. Nobel Peace Prize winner for genius annotation.
What a guy.
We solved homophobia. Who did it? Chaser Wolf on the genius annotation for
he deserves a monument.
Song? Beautiful moment in American history.
When she says, I believe that we're in too deep, do you think that she's referencing the Sum 41
song? I came this close to picking All Killer No Filler for
yes!
Next After School.
That album's so good.
Yeah, well, I think that is what she's referencing.
It seems like each time I'm with you, I lose my mind because I'm bending over backwards to relate.
Just as things were looking up, it seems it wasn't good enough, but still.
But still, we're trying one more time. What a classic. All killer, no filler.
There's a touch of filler. Yeah, always make the same mistakes, cause I'm bad at love. You can't blame me for trying. You know I'd be lying, saying you're the one. Ooh, that could finally fix me. Looking at my history, I'm bad at love. they added a little to the chorus that time.
They did a little bit of that subtle background stuff. But the beat, more or less, has not really shifted throughout the song.
Yeah, I think what I'm missing there, you of course you remember Bag Back, the Vince Staples track from last year?
Yes. Yeah.
Now that is a track that is the most perfect example of how to build tension by using the same riff for 3 minutes and yet continue to build tension rather than just begin with it.
Yep.
Just by altering the sound a little bit and making it a little coarser as time goes on without at all shifting the rhythm. I think that's maybe what I want a little more out of this song if it's going to stick in that space, but I appreciate that they at least added a little bit of like a counter melody, I guess, to that.
You just got to put the beat underwater for a little bit, you know? Get it all bubbly. Get it wet.
Put a fat old goldfish right on the front of it.
I do also agree with your assessment that she's maybe trying a bit hard, that she's really emphasizing the vocal performance there, trying to sell it. You know, granted, she's 23 years old. I don't know that she has got the pipes of, say, like a Beyonce or some other pop stars there. But, you know, it's fine. It's a fine vocal performance.
Yeah, it's not her range or the power in her voice for me. It's just that affectation You should move to Delta, the Father John Misty thing. I'd like, there's just a certain tendency with pop vocalists right now, and I've noticed it's actually lessening, but there's a tendency to really imbue your voice with this like extra layer of like, just this this added layer of drama, add a little cigarette smoke to your vocals that wasn't there, or trying to make it sound more soulful, calling back to vocalists from soul vocalists that you have, your voice does not naturally have anything to do with.
You're getting that in your Ariana Grande's, your Alicia Cara's, your.
I just find that it's to be a little added layer of it's like an unnecessary coat of paint on something. Like, her voice is probably fine just as it is. I don't need her to like overperform so hard. But that said, I like how her vocals explode at the end. Like you said, they sound almost like rock vocals.
It's soaring.
To forgive. And forget.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like much we've heard this year on the Billboard.
Well, yeah.
I'm trying to think of other like songs like this, and there's very few moments for them just like hanging on a note at a time, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Because Cardi B shows up, and then no one can hang on anything.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's keep going. I'm gonna walk away. It's time to feel and face. It's time to feel and face. I know that you're afraid. I'm gonna walk away. It's time to feel and face. You know I'm bad at love, but you can't blame me for trying. You know I'd be lying. Decent bridge.
That's a great bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like if Baths was like modern pop, like like radio pop, just that twinkly like
bling bling bling.
Yeah, like ironic cutesiness for the bridge. Yeah. I think fits perfect. That's great.
All right. Well, Halsey knows that her lover is afraid of her leaving them when the feeling fades. She's basically referring to her bipolar disorder. Whoa, what? She mentions the disorder in multiple other songs, like Gasoline from her debut album, Badlands, and on Sorry from Hopeless Fountain Kingdom, Hopeless Fountain Kingdom. I thought it might be about her lover being afraid of her leaving when those first romantic feelings fade and in bad times, says Ava 1123.
Wrong.
No, it's about her bipolar disorder.
Just more at stake. Yeah,
I don't get bipolar at all in this thing.
I think if I was trying to, for my favorite artist, diagnose when and when they weren't talking about their own mental illness, I would check myself a few times before I conclusively said that they were referring to their mental illness. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying like I'm offended. I'm just saying like that's someone else's mental health issue. It's weird for you to be looking for it everywhere in their music. I don't think there's any evidence that that's what she's talking about here. She's not referenced it before. In the song, and she's in fact referenced more often that she finds a hard time committing because she has problems with her partner and won't work through them. Mm-hmm. So to just bring up her bipolar disorder seems, it just seems like a jump to me.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that her name is Ashley Nicolette Frangipan.
The genius poster.
No, that's actually Halsey's name. Ashley Nicolette Frangipan.
Yeah.
And Halsey is an anagram of Ashley.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So, okay, well. I don't have anything to say about
that. That's all the secrets I have for her. I can't tell you one way or the other about her bipolar disorder, but I can tell you her name is an anagram of Ashley.
Did you not like that bridge?
I don't know that I loved it.
Reminds me of the opening track from that last Baths album.
Yeoman?
Yeah, reminds me of Yeoman.
Hmm, I didn't know that I was getting that.
Yo, do you want to get, whenever Sea of Thieves comes out, you want to get Sea of Thieves and just listen to Yeoman and play Sea of Thieves?
Of course. That's perfect.
Yeah.
If only we could turn the ship into an airship.
Oh, there you go.
You know, because that's really what it's all about. Got this must be safe. The airship, and are these your fellow crew? Where are we headed?
Yeah, just smooching on the airship.
Bleeding. Finally fix me, looking at my history. I'm bad at love. Ooh, ooh. Oh, you know. I'm bad at love.
Ooh, ooh. Hey, I like that last note.
I love when it just... is 3 minutes on the dot. Like, oh. No extra hang-on, no little doodad, no thunder. We got to figure in the last 7 seconds of a song.
Yeah.
Just end it. Whew. Mark, it sounds like you're head over heels for this thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great song. I like that it ends with that just totally, like, all that affectation I'm complaining about just ends with oh, just that last gasp of defeat before the song finishes is an actual ending and not a fade out. I love that.
Mm-hmm. I think most folks are scared to do that these days.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying, but this was totally solid.
Mm-hmm. The album was released back in June of last year, so it's pretty old at this point.
It's basically ancient.
But she finally made it on the Billboard. Are you adding it on to your best album of last year?
No.
Don't lie to me, Mark.
Yeah, I don't think I will.
All right, well, I'm going to take it.
I'm also taking it.
Yes!
I was lying to you.
Would this have been one of the best Billboards last year?
For me, it would have definitely made it. For me, it would.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to think about it a bit more for me, but I enjoyed it. It's good.
Yeah. You know what? Great time. Thanks, Halsey. Great time for me.
All right. Thanks, Halsey. We've got some time, Mark. I think it's time for you and I to dig into what else we've been listening to this week. And I understand that you've been an active reader once again, and there's a certain article concerning a certain jazz legend and father of a loved actress, Rashida Jones, that you would love to get into on this week's show. My man Quincy has said some not-so-kosher things in a recent interview with, was it Variety?
I thought it was Vulture. I'm pulling it up now.
One of the V's.
Yeah, it was Vulture.
Vulture. Okay. Why don't you set the scene for those of us who are not in on the what has transpired here with Mr. Quincy?
Yeah. Quincy Jones had, you know, a pretty storied career as a producer and musician.
An important figure.
Yes, I would say so. Especially in, like, the pop scene, an important figure. Not necessarily someone, he's now in his 80s, not necessarily someone who, if they're being interviewed, is, like, notable, other than, like, obviously for fans who just kind of like hearing from him. Not something that's newsworthy, but he, just 4 days ago or so, just was interviewed by Vulture, and he comes across as completely bonkers. Just all these conspiracy theories, he reveals he knows who killed John F. Kennedy. Like, it is amazing. It is quite the read. Says some really interesting things about musicians he's worked with, particularly Michael Jackson. And I think maybe the most fascinating thing for me was the story about Marlon Brando having sex with every male actor in Hollywood in the 50s.
I think, Mark, the best way to maybe approach this, Pitchfork has distilled what they say the 10 best quotes from this thing. Maybe we read through each of these and talk about them.
Okay, I'll let you handle that then.
Okay, so first off, on Marilyn Monroe, he says, Frank Sinatra was always trying to hook me up with Marilyn Monroe, but Marilyn Monroe had a chest that looked like pears, man. I don't even know what that means. A chest that looked like pears?
From what end?
Yeah. I would think that's okay. Like,
they're like breasts, you mean?
Yeah.
Like, most women have breasts.
That's a natural thing, Quincy.
Yeah, there's a lot of breasts in the world. Also, we've all seen Marilyn Manson's breasts.
We've all seen Marilyn Manson's boobs.
We've all seen Marilyn Monroe's breasts because she did Playboy. Like, it's not like a weird...
Yeah.
Like, that's like a... Not that, like, it's like, oh, I like Marilyn Monroe porn. It's like a figure of historical document. It's, like, odd that he would come out and be like,
important historical note there in her career.
It was, yeah. Like, that was, like, a moment in, like, sex symbol, you know?
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to say. No one is.
Some might say the moment.
Yes, I would agree.
All right. Well, he also said something about Elvis Presley. He said, I was with Tommy Dorsey when Presley showed up at 17 years old, and Dorsey said, F him. I won't play with him. He wouldn't let this band play with him. Did you think Dorsey was right? Asked GQ. Yeah. Yeah. MF-er couldn't sing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in the interview he goes on to say that Elvis just was an outright thief of, like, if I'm remembering right, black music.
Sure.
Like rock and roll.
I think that's fair.
That's just true. But this is going to be the running theme for my reading of the interview, is that he has picked up on certain truths, and then just the years and the fame and wealth or whatever have just warped him. And now he's come out the other end with, like, a kernel of truth that has exploded into an insane unreality.
Well, he's got some thoughts on Malcolm X, so this is going to be good.
Okay.
He says, every time we'd go to Detroit at the Majestic Hotel, standing in front with his Italian shirt on and amber glasses, Malcolm X, Detroit Red. That's where we bought our dope. It was before he went to prison. You'd buy off him? Yeah, he was a dope dealer. That's how he went to prison. So you would personally buy drugs off Malcolm X. Personally, he nods. Everybody in the band bought it. The junkies used to call cocaine girl and heroin boy. That's because they said cocaine would take from your woman.
Okay, also a running theme is him answering questions that were not asked.
On that time, Prince tried to run over Michael Jackson with a limousine. Did you ever see that thing with James Brown? Oh, yeah, says GQ. GQ writes, Jones is referring to the legendary evening, August 20th, 1983, when both Michael Jackson and Prince attended a James Brown show at the Beverly Theater in Los Angeles. It's a long one. That's heavy. He made a damn fool out of himself, didn't he? Referring to Prince. Jackson had film of what happened that night. Prince told Michael he'd kill him if I showed it to anybody. Jones explains, but one way or another, time-coded raw footage of what took place that night eventually surfaced. First, Brown invites Jackson to the stage. Jackson sings a few phrases, spins, moonwalks, then embraces Brown and can be seen whispering to him. Brown then calls for Prince. After a delay, Prince gets on stage, takes a guitar, jams a little, then strips off his shirt. He does some mic stand tomfoolery, dances a little more, then nearly tumbles into the audience trying to pull down an oversized street lamp prop. It was a superstar face-off that's been seen as a triumph for Michael Jackson and a rare humiliation for Prince. He spoke to Michael after the show? Asks GQ. Oh, yeah, he spoke to him. He waited in the limousine to try and run him over, and LaToya and his mother. How do you know Prince was trying to run him over? He knew. Michael knows stuff. He was there. He said it was his intention. Michael told you that. Yeah. The time okay. Michael Jackson's chimpanzee Bubbles bit Rashida Jones? He bit Rashida, my poor baby?
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah.
That's another interview he just did. We're talking about two different interviews.
Oh, really?
There are two.
Oh, my God.
One with GQ and one with Vulture. I was like, I'm pretty sure this is Vulture. There is the Vulture interviews that I've read. These are new for me.
Wow. Two interviews.
Yeah.
Here's the one on JFK. You seem to know a lot. I know too much, man. What's something you wish you didn't know?
That's GQ.
Who killed
this is
Kennedy?
From the GQ. Or that's from Vulture.
Yeah.
That's the Vulture one. Yeah.
Who did it? Chicago mobster Sam Giancana. The connection was there between Sinatra and the Mafia and Kennedy. Joe Kennedy, he was a bad man. He came to Frank to have him talk to Giancana about getting votes. I've heard this theory before, that the mob helped win Illinois for Kennedy in 1960. Quincy Jones, we shouldn't be talking about this publicly.
He says that a lot. He repeats that over and over.
Apparently, he dated Ivanka Trump. If Jones is correct, 12 years ago, he would have been 72, and Ivanka would have been 24.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this guy's clearly, like, not all in the present, right? There's no way that happened.
What were your first impressions of the Beatles? They were the worst musicians in the world. They were no playing MFers. Paul was the worst bass player I ever heard. And Ringo, don't even talk about it. I remember once we were in the studio with George Martin, and Ringo had taken 3 hours in a 4-bar thing he was trying to fix on a song. He couldn't get it. And we said, mate, why don't you get some lager and lime, some shepherd's pie, and take an hour and a half to relax a little bit? So we did. We called Ronnie Varell, a jazz drummer. Ronnie came in 15 minutes and tore it up. Ringo comes back and says, George, can you play it back for me one more time? So George did. And Ringo says, that didn't sound too bad. And I said, yeah, MF-er, because it ain't you. Great guy, though.
Yeah. I understand Ringo Paul's not a great drummer, but also we've seen him
Ringo
play.
Paul?
Ringo
Is that Logan Paul's brother? Is he also doing offensive YouTube videos about...
Oh, no.
...terrible things?
Let's just not even... Let's have Logan Paul disappear, please.
Yeah.
From my memory. You got any more?
No. Unless you have some.
I just want to read... Just the tone of this interview, I think, is pretty well captured. There's two ones that you didn't bring up that I think are important to bring up. So this is from the Vulture article. It's such a strange juxtaposition, how Michael's music was so joyous, but his life just seems sadder and more odd as time goes by. And then he goes on to say, yes, but at the end, Michael's problem was propofol, and that problem affects everyone. Doesn't matter if you're famous. Big Pharma making OxyContin and all that stuff is a serious thing. I was around the White House for 8 years with the Clintons, and I learned about how much influence Big Pharma has. It's no joke. Hey, what's your sign, man? Pisces. Me too. It's a great sign.
Holy God.
You just mentioned the Clintons, who are friends of yours. Why is there still such a visceral dislike of them? What are other people not seeing in Hillary, for example, that you see? And then he goes on to just talk about the Kennedy assassination from there.
Perfect.
But here's the one that I thought was the mind blower. That it was just something. Let me look for it here. Oh, he talks about Bill Cosby too. That's a whole other deal. Oh, here we go. Okay, this is it. This is important. So they're talking about back in the day music. So this is the interviewer. Maybe not the cha-cha. We're cutting in big conversation. Quincy Jones says, Marlon Brando used to go cha-cha dancing with us. He could dance his ass off. He was the most charming MF-er you ever met. He'd have sex with anything. Anything. He'd have sex with a mailbox. James Baldwin, Richard Pryor, Marvin Gaye. And the interviewer says, he slept with him? How do you know? Quincy Jones frowns. Come on, man. He did not care. You like Brazilian music? Yeah, but I don't know how much beyond Jorge Ben and Gilberto Gil. Then they talk about Brazilian music. That's important.
It's like Whiplash.
Yeah. Do you like Brazilian
man,
music?
I can't imagine being the interview in that instance. Like, try to keep up with that.
Like, there's several instances where the interviewer has written down him saying, okay, but what did you just say? So, yeah.
Wow.
It's special.
That is something else, man.
Yeah.
What a guy.
It's a fascinating read. I recommend it. I don't trust most of it as far as detail goes, but it is real interesting.
It's like Kanye West Twitter feed.
I don't think Kanye ever said anything that crazy.
Yeah. You're probably right.
Do you agree? Like, that's way crazier.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's segue now, Mark. There's one album I know we both listened to this week we should talk about here. It's Rye's next album, Blood. Rye, the interestingly fronted male group here. Not a woman in front of this thing. It's a man. That's a man. but I was a big fan of Woman from 2013. I know you were too. What'd you think of Blood?
I'm not sure I'm done digesting how I feel about Blood. I'm kind of curious... If you are.
Yeah, I don't know. I might need some more time with it. But I will say, on the whole, I'm enjoying it. I know that positive press has not quite been there for this thing. Most folks are seeing it kind of derivative and not necessarily reinventing the sound. But I also think that sound is so unique and cool that I'm psyched to hang out in it a bit more. It maybe feels a bit slower and not as urgent as the previous album. Less sweeping string arrangements, like on that opener, Open, which is still, I think, the pinnacle of their achievement. I like Blood a whole lot. There are some great moments. I think the opener is really good. I think Waste is very evocative and great for setting the mood here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I enjoyed the album.
Waste is okay. I think the track immediately following that is
Taste.
Yeah, Taste is good.
Waste to Taste.
But I don't know. There's a certain lack of sexiness to it. Mm-hmm. There's like a lack of like titillation, I guess.
Well, what if they put a big naked lady on the front cover? Would that be titillating enough for you?
See, they sure did do that, didn't they?
Yeah.
It feels like they're trying to...
And all their singles have different naked ladies on it, too.
I think
that's their aesthetic. That's their aesthetic is naked ladies.
Yeah, that's true. But there's different ways of having a naked lady, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you look at their first album...
it's like, whoa.
Yeah, it's such a great photograph of... There's a woman's... It's primarily a woman with her head reclined, and the shot is, like, centered on her neck. You don't see much. It's a very close zoom-in on her neck, and it's the very top of her torso. It's, like, very evocative without being explicit in any way.
Yeah.
And Blood just has just a butt. It's just this woman and her butt in a field.
Big ol' butt.
Yeah, which is fine, but it's like they're writing songs in the same style, but without any of like the mystery or the seduction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the difference between listening to an album about sex between two people who are in love and at risk of losing that, and then listening to an album about a couple who are married. Like, mm-hmm. There's something romantic about it, but just not pressing. And a lot of the songs I thought were maybe a little corny. Like, Song Free is corny. Like, it's just kind of, it's like sweet, but like, it reminds me of that. I think it's an SNL skit where it's like a bunch of guys around like a poker table.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys, like, some of the guys are like, oh yeah, I met this girl at the club the other night. Like, oh, I'm gonna go crazy on that girl. They're just like bragging about their sex lives. And they get to the guy whose house it is, and he's bragging about having sex with his wife. He's like, whoa, we're all friends with your wife. Like, we know your wife personally. Like, there's something about that. Like, I don't want to think about her doing that stuff. Which is maybe not, like, a healthy view of sex, I guess, but, like, it's there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lack of excitement to a marital sex situation. It's no longer titillating to hear that you had sex with your wife the same way. And I feel like maybe there's a little bit of that in Blood. There's a little bit of like, I don't know. We're just kind of here for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just, they're trying to capture that same lighting in a bottle again, which is a mistake.
Right. So they're falling victim to what Mimicking Birds didn't fall victim to.
Exactly.
Yeah. But because that first Rye album is so singular and so magical and a great thing front to finish. Trying to capture it again. You lose a little bit of that sheen the second time around. I don't know. I'm still pretty positive on it. I think there are some nice quieter moments here. More subtle shifts in the rhythm. Maybe I'm just I'm missing something, but I'm having an okay time with it.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I just... I think that first album is like classic, and just to hear them just write songs the exact same way, but without the same like sense of doing something new, I guess maybe makes me, there's like a slightly bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
I also think that they don't vary up the energy enough. The first album, if you listen back, you remember Open, but there's tracks like Last Fall or whatever, like tracks that are almost kind of dancey, like upbeat songs.
Mm-hmm.
That are still intimate and sexy, but there's a new energy brought in, mm-hmm. before they drop it back down to like the, you know, bedroom stuff. Whereas I think this is way more staid, way more on course, which hurts.
That's true.
I think.
That's true. Okay. Well, what else you got, Mark?
Oh man, I got a ton of stuff that's going to be hard to do. I'm going to have to split this up between weeks. There's no way.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you maybe a choice here. How about this? All right. I listened to potentially the worst rap album I've ever heard.
Wow. Okay.
I listened to almost the entirety of Snoop Dogg's catalog. I listened to a record that has the most bizarre translation for a press release I've seen in a band in a good long time.
Okay.
And I listened to a bunch of new stuff from this year.
Well, I got to hear about the worst rap album.
That's where you want to start. That's where you want to do. Let's do two.
I thought
of those.
When you said the next thing about Snoop Dogg, I'm like, Snoop Dogg has the worst rap album of all time?
No. It's not that. How about maybe I'll save the new stuff for next week?
Okay.
And I'll just do that stuff this week.
Okay.
So I've been listening to a lot of 90s stuff. If you've listened to the show at all, it's been kind of what I've been jamming to on the off time. And I was kind of curious, like, it seems like many of the rap artists that are popularly discussed and had, like, hit records, inspired groups who copycatted them who just disappeared. Like, they had, like, one album and then faded away. And there's all these artists who had, like, a hit and then just slowly gets depressing. Like, you look at their Spotify page and it's, like, someone used, like, a Mac filter, like a computer filter that everyone used to like take selfies with to make this album art. Like, it's sad that we're here. I wanted to explore that stuff a little bit. So I ended up stumbling upon a group that I cannot find a professional review for.
Okay.
From the 90s. That was produced by Eazy-E. Of note. Called HWA. The HWA. Have you heard of them?
No.
It's the Hoes with Attitude.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Who have written the most hilarious collection of sex songs about sex that I've heard in a long time.
Okay.
I'm not sure how to jump into the conversation other than maybe just to play it.
I think that makes sense.
Okay. Here's a song called Eat This.
I've been in this motherfucker all this time and ain't had nobody down here playing in this pussy.
I was gonna skip that a little bit.
Yes.
I like AKA vagina, so introduce yourself. But if you need a little help, I'm gonna take your head and leave you there. Let your tongue part the hair. It's gonna feel so good and maybe even mushy. But come on down and eat my pussy.
Listen to that beat.
It's certainly there.
Nothing wrong with songs about sex, but that is the ugliest beat.
It's pretty tame.
That's bad. The primary problem with the album is that for the most part, the lyrics are just the bottom of the barrel like rhymes ever. Yeah. Just totally like rhyming with like run and like just like simple words, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what were you gonna say?
It just seems so sleepy, like they're like not convinced of it.
Oh no, they're sorry, maybe I'm doing this wrong. Let's jump into a song called Freaky Days. Maybe that'll pump up the jams a little bit.
Freaky Days.
These are the days of freaky days. These are the days on a woman's way. These are the days of freaky days.
What, you didn't like that part?
Oh, that like tuba or trombone or whatever is that background is horrific.
Well, let me. I'll skip ahead a little bit. It gets better.
Okay.
Finding a big ass behind, I give H E A D. I want a big black dick just for me. Now let me tell you this: since we're talking dick. I met this nigga, said his name was Nick. Now Nick was freaking me well. He made my pussy get hotter than the flames of hell. I was acting shitty. I met this nigga in Atlantic City. He said his name was Shad Dog. He was a beautiful black man driving a hog. I said, let me suck your dick and give you a show. It's gonna cost you some money cause you know that I'm a hoe.
Oh.
Did that help?
No.
No?
Yeah, where's my cupcake at? Bring her on here.
Yeah, I think there's like a space for HWA. I was like, I kind of started to study up on them. I guess the lead vocalist, like, they broke up after this album. Vocalist is trying to reform them with younger members, like get like a new HWA, which is cool. Like, I think there's a space for that, but there's just the production on this bad, and these lyrics are just not there. They're too simple. Like, they just rely on saying, these lyrics are based around just saying sex acts. Like, there's nothing other than that.
That's some stale ass rap music right there.
Yeah, here's a fun song that I think pretty quickly mentions George H.W. Bush's sex habits.
Timely.
You're looking at the phone, so motherfucking tempting, and you see us on the TV, so you copy the number. Real fan hoes make your mass up to one to dial 1-900 on your telephone, hoping that your wife don't bring a fat ass home. The phone is ringing, your heart is beating fast. You know I'm talking shit on your monkey ass.
Like, listen to that. Listen to those rhymes, dude.
That's lazy. It's
Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad. Yeah. There's one notable song in here called The Conflict, which is a song about the NWA. Basically, it's a diss track against Dr. Dre and Eazy-E for being sexual assaulters.
Oh, wow.
Which at the time, no one was doing.
Right.
So it's like of historical document, this album. Especially considering she was produced by Eazy-E and had him on the music video. It's like a fascinating thing that happened.
Yeah.
Considering no one else was doing it. But... yeah, I'm gonna play just a final track here called To Live or Die, and we'll ride it out, you know? We'll ride it out.
Okay, ride or die.
Oh, this song is kind of weird and racist. Just a heads
Great.
Up.
Great, okay, thanks for the heads up.
What do you think, Charlie?
I'd rather
awesome.
Die.
Wow.
Not a hard choice at all. I'll make it right now. Please kill me.
Okay. Well, yeah. I listened to that entire thing.
Oh, my God. Why did you do that to yourself, Mark?
I was riveted. I was like, I've never heard anything that sounds like this.
It's got a stank to it.
It stinks. I could smell it.
I could smell it all the way over here.
What does it smell like?
You know what? Now that you mentioned it, it doesn't actually have a smell.
What are you smelling?
I think I left my oven on.
Is your like smoke alarm on? Is your carbon monoxide alarm on?
You know what? That's probably it. I'm probably going to pass out in 10 minutes.
Okay.
If I stop talking, please send help.
I definitely won't.
Okay. What else you got?
All right. I'll sprint through these for you. I listen to a whole lot more 90s rap. Just a whole lot.
Can't stop.
A bushel.
You're addicted to it.
To kind of compliment that, I jumped on to some more albums, some more artists that like were riding the coattails of these 90s rap artists who ended up blowing up and sustaining careers who could not hold on long enough to survive into the future. So I listened to Dog Food by The Dog Pound. Snoop Dogg sort of like crew, like second in command kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy to find that dog food is actually, like, despite the fact that it's one of, maybe on, like, the most misogynist of albums from that G-Funk era, has some interesting, good stuff to it. I'm going to play just a quick clip of Respect.
R-E-S-P-S-P-D.
All right, could you spell Respect again for me?
R-E-S-P-S-P-T.
Yeah, you nailed it.
What would you think? Nah, realizing that I'm surviving off instinct. What makes my mind hit the perfect timing for me to twist shit, switch and rip shit to fuck up like The Shining? Cause I'm in my own zone, alone I'm found.
That's a killer beat, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Really great production on that album. I ended up liking it, but not loving it. It was like the last like big G-Funk album, basically. Mm-hmm. So, interesting note, I guess. So, okay, here's... I listened to No More Mr. Nice Guy by Gangstar, who are great.
Yeah.
East Coast stuff. I like Gangstar a lot. There's no reason to listen to it. I just like Gangstar. It's a good album.
Yeah.
It's before they got really interesting. I never listened to their debut. It's okay. More pressingly, I listened to almost Snoop Dogg's entire career.
Right.
So... I'm just going to run through them. Obviously, the debut album, Doggy Style, is a classic.
Classic.
Right? You listened to that recently.
Yeah. Had a great time with it.
Yeah. The production is unbelievable. Dr. Dre, pretty much at the height of his abilities. I think Snoop Dogg is a more likable figure than Dr. Dre, so having him forefront the album makes it go down a little bit easier for me. Mm-hmm. Definitely still kind of sexist in spots. Ain't No Fun of the Homies Can't Have None has some weird stuff in it. Mm-hmm. But it is historically significant. Obviously good. Yeah. I moved on from that to The Dog Father.
Right.
Second Snoop Dogg album. Immediate drop in quality.
Ooh.
It's a solid album. It's not great. Mm-hmm. He's lost Dr. Dre. He hires producers. You can feel it.
Yeah.
You can feel it. He hires producers that try to emulate some G-Funk stuff that actually do okay. Like mm-hmm. For what this album is, it's interesting. It came right off the fact that he was he was not indicted for murder. He was in court for potentially murdering someone. He was not indicted for that. So the album has that energy to it. It begins with like news clips of him. There's some classics on it. But overall, maybe not my favorite thing he's done. But here's where it gets interesting. So he decides Suge Knight sucks at this point in his career, right? He's like, man, Suge Knight is a monster. And it turns out Suge Knight is a monster. Suge Knight is a horrible human being who's done bad things.
Yes.
So then he goes and he founds No Limit Records. Now, I would like you to do me a favor, because this is when Snoop Dogg's career becomes an insane mess and it never... stops being insane from here on out.
Okay.
If you could do me a favor,
mm-hmm.
I would like you on your Spotify to pull up the album Da Game Is To Be Sold. D-A. Da Game Is To Be Sold, Not To Be Told. And I'd like you to take a long, hard look at the album art for this album.
Wow.
What do you think?
It's busy. There's a lot happening here. Snoop World.
Yeah, I actually didn't notice the Snoop World when I was first.
Really?
Yeah. I was preoccupied with... We do have puppers.
You got a nice muzzle on one of the puppers.
Why is that?
Because you don't tell about the game. It's not to be told.
Oh, you're right. That's a good point. This album has the dubious distinction of having a sequel to Gin and Juice. In it, called Gin and Juice 2.
There it is. Always a surefire classic.
Yeah, it was a classic the first time. Let's do it again. Second time. The sequel. Let's run that game again.
This always works well.
Here's a clip of that.
Get your motherfucking glass, because it's a blast from the past. Yeah. You didn't think we would touch it two times, nigga. Gin and juice up in this bitch. Yeah. Some of that juice by the pound flavor, you feel me? Get your ice, get your cups, because we about to get fucked up again. You hear me? Yeah.
straight up. Yeah. I'm still smoking, drifting, sweating the motherfucker, twisted off a cup of that old Emmy juice. Eat it in the seat.
Hmm. How you feel about that?
Not
just
as good.
That first.
Not as good.
References that he's still doing it. Like, I'm still doing this. Just not inspiring. Move on from that to No Limit Top Dog, which is a great deal better. He's sort of back in his element a little bit. More like classically Snoop Dogg feeling, but it's like a solid album, not a great one. Move on from there to what's the next one after that? The Last Meal. The Last Meal also has a sequel to What's My Name, which is way worse. It's way worse. The album is better, but it's way worse. What's My Name Part 2? Here it is. I don't want to play anymore. I mean, you get the point. Like that's a song. Yeah, no, the album's okay, but no. But this is all before a certain losing my edge figure named Pharrell basically decides he should have a career again by producing him. Do you remember this blast from the past? Remember that song, Charlie?
Actually, no. It doesn't ring a bell.
Doesn't ring a bell?
No.
Here, let me skip ahead. Skip ahead.
With some pimp fluid. Mommy, don't worry, I won't abuse it. Hurry up and finish so you can watch Clueless. I laugh at these niggas when they ask who do this. But everybody know who girl that you with.
Beautiful.
Not ringing a bell?
No. No, it's not.
Okay. Well, either way, I think you can hear, it's like pretty audible, that his career has returned at that point.
Sure. Yeah. That production's great.
Yeah. The album is not amazing, and it's spotted with some just lazy filler tracks, but he's relevant again. You can feel that he has a new reason to exist, and it's writing club songs.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the last album by Snoop Dogg. Let's do the last thing I'll talk about this week. Rhythm and Gangsta.
The masterpiece.
Yes. Certainly you remember this.
Pimps in the crib, ma. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. When the pigs try to get at you, park it like it's hot.
There it is. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Rhythm and Gangsta is one of Snoop Dogg's most disgusting albums. It has probably the most upsetting instance of misogyny I've heard in a rap album maybe ever.
Wow.
But I have to say, if you're just taking into account that that's just what Snoop Dogg does, he has a collaboration with the Bee Gees.
Wow.
This album's so interesting. His production is on fire. I mean, like, that song is cheesy now, but if you, like, listening to it, like, after the fact, like, that it's just, like, a cheesy song at clubs, like, listening to it, really, the production's, like, really fascinating.
Yeah.
It's so minimal. And weird and compelling. Like, Pharrell just knocked out of the park, I think.
He's pretty good, huh?
Yeah. Some of the stuff on here that he produced, I'm not a huge fan of. But, like, when he was doing the singles, he was doing the singles.
Yeah.
Rhythm and Gangsta, I think, holds up, other than the really gross and horrible parts, really well. Like, right off the bat, it's kind of a... It's got a lot going on. Interesting club songs. And it's interesting to read, like, critical reviews of Rhythm and Gangsta at the time, which were a lot of really negative ones, especially from Pitchfork, who gave it a 2 point something.
Wow.
criticizing it for being just needless, like, club, like, it doesn't mean anything music. And they're right. Like, there is no message in the song to be gleaned. There's no big statement. There's no masterpiece. But we have moved on as a culture to now accept that rap songs that are written for the club are a legitimate thing to have a critical eye for, in the same way that we do for pop music.
Right.
And it's interesting that at that point, we wouldn't allow rap music to be that. We were too critical of it. Like, it was okay for a pop artist to write something that meant nothing but was danceable. We could still critically analyze that. But for rap to do it, it was just considered like the detritus of the Billboard. I think listening to this was the biggest revelation I had in his career, that, like, it's, wow, this is actually was really forward thinking musically. And it basically cemented that we had to keep thinking about Snoop Dogg forever. But yeah, it's like, I don't think he ever wrote or probably will ever write an album that's a classic again, though. I don't think he'll ever make another Doggy Style. I don't think it'll ever happen.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So you're about halfway through his albums. You're going to keep going on. You gonna listen to more?
I'm exhausted. No.
I imagine you've heard most of the good stuff at that point.
Yeah, I don't know if I need to hear anymore.
All right.
But it was interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like a ride.
It taught me why people listen to Snoop Dogg. Because if you listen to Drop It Like It's Hot, that's one version of Snoop Dogg, right? So what if you listen to, let's say, the Bee Gees collaboration? Let me play a quick clip of that.
Okay.
Ups and downs, smiles and frowns, share with me. Fairy tales are make-believe, there will be. Ups and downs, smiles and frowns, share with me. Fairy tales are make-believe, there will be.
All right, I'm not going to keep playing that. It's really annoying. That's a certain kind of Snoop Dogg, right? It's right. Not quite the Drop It Like It's Hot Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
So let's skip ahead to, really quick, let's skip ahead to Can You Control Yo-Ho?
Ooh.
Niggas, get your Miller Genuine Draft, because it's Miller time. We about to go hard on these hoes on this one right here.
Can you control your hoe?
You got a bitch that won't do what you say.
You can't control your hoe.
She hard-headed, she just won't obey.
Can you control your hoe?
Oh,
yeah, I won't get into the backhand part of the song.
That's awful.
It is awful. But what's interesting is that Bee Gees song is about, like, a long-term relationship where you have to just stick together.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the opposite message, right?
Yeah.
And Drop It Like It's Hot is something else altogether. It's legit, it's like pop. It's just pop. There is nothing beneath it. It's just like, ha, we're dancing. And it kind of got me thinking why people listen to Snoop Dogg. How can he be all three of these things at once? Is that he is just marketing to different people all the time. Like, when he started his career, he was this, like, prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
He kept going back to, he's like a very loyal guy. That's like his primary trait. He's loyal and he cares about the people who care about him. And he's also a master of marketing. And that Ben Westhoff book I read, he brings up his Instagram account, where he talks about socks, and then in the interview, Snoop Dogg explains why I'm talking about these socks and bring up the brand is because I think if I do it enough, I will get a marketing deal. And he did. So there's no message to Snoop Dogg. There's no inherent through line of he has something to say. It's never existed. He just knows those markets, and he just says the things for those markets.
Making money.
Exactly. So the reason he's able to succeed is because it's fun to hear Snoop Dogg talk. And he knows what you want to hear.
He's a businessman.
He's a businessman who cares about
the people
who are trying, yeah, who are like beneath him trying to get to where he is.
Yeah.
So
he's Uncle Snoop
now. That's kind of my, he is Uncle Snoop. He's an old, also in that Pitchfork interview, they talk about how he's an old man in the Drop It Like It's Hot album, Rhythm of Gangsta, which is funny because he's still making albums.
But yeah. Boy, did they get that wrong.
They sure did.
That sounds like a crazy time, man.
I just did a lot of talking. I'm going to shut up forever now.
Nothing else? You got more?
Nah, I got to say that this is too much. It's too much me. I got to say that's for, okay, the rest for next week.
Next week. We got lots to talk about still. I'll be quick. A couple of Sufjan songs. I've seen both Call Me By Your Name and I, Tanya at this point. A couple of movies in the Oscar race. And Sufjan wrote a song inspired by each of them, one in the movie and one not. Here's a little bit of Mystery of Love, which is up for a Grammy, or not a Grammy, an Oscar.
Oh, to see. The first time that you kissed me, boundless by the time I cried. I built your walls around me.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That's some Sufjan Stevens stuff right there, man. I think that's maybe my favorite to win the Oscar, but I don't know that it will. Along those lines, we've got the Tanya Harding song, which is not a part of I, Tanya, but was released around the same time. Here it is in E flat major.
Knows what you are. Just some Portland white trash. You confronted your sorrow like there was no tomorrow, while the rest...
It's a bit too sweet and treacly for me. I wasn't necessarily a fan of that one.
Okay.
What else do I got here? Ooh, Mark, we got big news here on the Tool front. We're going to have to press through teaching Tool here because while Tool did not announce a new album yet, we did get the first album in what must be 15 years from the Tool offshoot, A Perfect Circle.
Okay.
Eat the Elephant is out on 420, baby.
Is it really?
Yeah. And okay. Maynard James Keenan in the announcement for the album acknowledged that, saying he's very excited to release it on that day and hopes that everyone has a wonderful time listening to it.
Okay.
So here's the one of the singles from the album called Talk Talk. It's about how people need to shut up and start doing something about gun control.
Wow.
Yeah. The album, I want you to look at the album art for this thing. If you look Talk Talk on your Spotify, it's horrifying. Okay. It's awful.
I'm excited. I'm folded up. Okay, so while I pull this up, my real question is this count as a teaching Tool moment, or is it going to be a regular review?
I think we've got a whole separate series they're on here of A Perfect Circle.
What's it going to be called?
With drawing perfect circles. How to draw a perfect circle.
That's not a good title.
How to draw a perfect circle.
Oh, God. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's offensive to the eyes.
Yeah, that sucks to look at.
It feels like it's right Nosferatu. Out of 2003, doesn't it?
It's Nosferatu and Rob Zombie in one.
Yeah. So, I am intrigued by the release of that thing. I have no idea how it's going to go. And then finally, here on the week, I also, for the first time, Mark, watched Purple Rain.
Oh!
The whole way through.
What do you think?
3 out of 5.
3 out of 5? Why?
The music... and the musical performances of Prince on stage with his band doing the songs Purple Rain, 5 out of 5. Oh my God, that dude is charismatic as hell and can tear up the stage, and the songs on that album are super, super good. But all of the melodrama surrounding it, I found totally uninteresting and not so greatly acted and just long and uninteresting. So it evens out to about a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Not bad. Not great.
Should I watch
Didn't
it?
Hate. Yeah, I think you should watch it. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
So I've listened to the Purple Rain some more this weekend. Man, that album is just the greatest.
Yeah.
Oh, classic. One more thing to ruin your evening. This will be quick. But Churches is back, Mark. We got a new Churches album coming out this year. Did you hear that single?
No, not actually, no.
Here's Get Out, not the movie. Can you hear that Jamie XX in there?
Yeah. Wow, it's really there, huh?
Gonna disappoint you, Mark.
Get out.
So there's that.
Can I tell you that the track Get Out makes me want to go to the sunken place?
maybe play a little bit of this. A little bit of that.
Is that more Churches?
No, that's Childish Gambino. That's the song that plays over the intro to Get Out.
Oh, I see.
There's an amazing, an art theater in Amsterdam, Ohio out here that is going to be showing Get Out again. And they've got like an ad that runs at the beginning of their shows, hype it. And it's just a slow motion shot of the lead character falling into the sunken place. With that song playing, and it's like really slow and distorted, and it's just the coolest thing I've seen. I'm like, oh my god! I wasn't even super hot on that movie when it came out the first time, but man, does that make me want to go see it again?
That movie's amazing.
Yeah, it probably is. I'm probably wrong. Everyone else keeps telling me it's amazing, and I'm like, it's good, but I didn't love it. And everyone's like, no, you're wrong. And I'm like, oh, you're probably right.
Yeah, I had a conversation with somebody who told me that too. They're just like, I don't get it. Why is it so good? I'm like, there's like the conversation like that movie's having with you. It's interesting. Like, you know, genre is metaphor. Okay. He's just getting chased. He's trying to get his head.
It's a scary movie. It's not even that scary.
Yeah, the person was telling us to me said, we were laughing. It was silly.
Yeah. It is funny.
Yeah. Some people just can't handle getting out. They're too busy in it. They're too busy in it.
Well, Mark, we've been in it for a minute now. I think it's time for us to get out of it. So let's talk next week. What are we listening to, bud?
Okay, there's some amazing albums I just want to say.
Like what?
This week. No Age put out an album like 2 weeks ago, I think, called it's like Snares Like a Haircut or something like that. That is actually really strong for them.
Yeah,
really enjoy that album. JPEG Mafia.
Can I
put
ask
out
real
the
quick,
most.
Where are you listening to that? Because I couldn't find it on Spotify.
I found it through a different means.
Okay.
Different means than Spotify.
You'll have to
mysterious.
You'll have to help me out with that because I couldn't locate it.
It's a secret place.
The sunken place?
Where Spotify does not go. The sunken place.
Mm, okay.
There's no age at all. But yeah, that would be worth covering because it's interesting and it does interesting things.
JPEG Mafia.
Shit Kid.
Oh, no.
Shit Kid put on an EP that it actually is...
You love that.
...really interesting. I did. I'm not going to make you listen to it. JPEG Mafia put out, I think, the most incisive rap album. Like, one of the most incisive rap albums I've ever heard.
Wow.
There's a song called I Effing Can't Wait Until Morrissey Dies.
Holy cow.
And it's like really there's one of the songs that I don't care about Neogaf or how I feel about Neogaf dying, and it's just him saying, I don't care.
Why?
It's fascinating.
Wow.
I'm some strong political commentary on it that's worth I'm not done thinking about it yet.
Okay.
But what I want to talk about more than any of that.
MGMT,
is
Little Dark Age.
No, absolutely not. It's not that. That's not what I want to talk about, Charlie.
Okay.
It's not that. I want to talk about one of the more interesting failures in pop music in recent memory that we both listened to already.
Yep.
It's called Man of the Woods by Justin Timberlake.
I think that thing deserves a thorough autopsy.
Yes.
We've got the corpse in front of us, and now it's time to slice on through the stuff and peel apart those layers and just see how in the heck it came together.
Yes. I'm really glad you put it that way because I don't want to come in here being like, ha, we're dunking on Justin Timberlake. Like, I think what he did, I don't think it works. I don't think it's good. And I think why it isn't good is really interesting. Like, the pop references he's pulling from are like weird and dated, and his entering into the cultural conversation is the most confused, annoying, like just a failure to recognize the realities of the world.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, and I want to talk about it with you.
I'm gonna hate it, but I'm also gonna love it.
Hell yeah.
All right, so that's Man of the Woods. We'll talk about it next week on the show. The Billboard charts this mark this week, Mark, have spoken. Marky Mark, it's Drake. Drake is back.
Okay.
It's called God's Plan.
Man, I love the Billboard.
They're just, they hear that word Drake, they hear Drake's coming out, and bam, he's number one.
That works for me.
Okay.
Last album was underrated.
Which one was that? Views? No, More Life.
More Life. Views was also underrated.
Nah, Views was appropriately rated.
Yeah, maybe you're right, actually.
I just can't believe he's keeping up this pace of releasing music. That guy doesn't stop.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah. All right. So next week on the show, it'll be JT and Drake. I can't imagine an episode more likely to draw in all sorts of listeners out there. Hope we don't offend anybody.
Yeah, draw them in and immediately get them to leave.
Oof. So we'll be getting into the sauce and putting our filthy hands all over all this stuff. As always, if you've got thoughts
Dude,
for
what?
Us... What?
What did you say?
Put our filthy hands all over this stuff.
You put our filthy hands in the sauce?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Haters gonna say it's fake, Mark.
I don't know, understand.
I'm just telling you what I know from JT.
Okay.
Well, if you have thoughts for us about the sauce or anything in between, give us a shout on the social media. We're out there for you. Drop a 5-star review in that podcast feed. That would mean the world to us. We appreciate your patronage, and thanks for listening. Hope to have a great show for you next week with Drake and Justin Timberlake.
We'll be here next week. Did Phil listen? What's nice?
Play that outro music!
Till the memory fades, and the test of time proves uneven and inaccurate. I heard a roaring sigh.